How can you prevent people from being rude? What do you do when a colleague takes credit for your work? A disruptive child ruins your meal in a restaurant. You receive an offensive email. Your child interrupts an adult conversation. When new neighbors are nosy. The answer, according to my guest this hour, is to embrace civility. Good morning, it's 10:07. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn this morning. We've all encountered rude behavior. The lack of civility pervades our culture. We've become self-absorbed narcissists. So, how do we navigate this sea of incivility? As you might have guessed, there's a book that answers this question, and it should come as no surprise that we have the author with us this morning to talk about this issue. The title of the book is The Civility Solution, What to Do When People Are Rude, published by St. Martin's Press. The author is P.M. Forney, a professor of Italian literature at Johns Hopkins University and co-founder of the Johns Hopkins Civility Project. He joins the program by telephone. Good morning, Professor Forney, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, John. It's great to be here.
Well, we seem to be going through something of an epidemic of rudeness, don't we?
Americans, most Americans, believe that incivility is a national problem. About 80% of Americans believe that the situation has gotten worse in the past 20 years, and about the same percentage believe that it is not trivial, the issue of incivility, because people who are uncivil are more prone to become violent. There is a connection between incivility and violence. And also Americans believe that the situation is not going to become better anytime soon.
Do we have any idea why this is happening?
Well, as a society, we have been very good at instilling self-esteem in our children. We have not been as successful in instilling restraint, self-control. And self-esteem is a good thing, but when we feed oversized portions of self-esteem to our children, we create children that are self-absorbed and will become self-absorbed adults, adults who believe that the world revolves around them and it's very difficult for them to be considerate and kind.
Well, you know,
that is one. I mean, that is one reason. It's not the only one. There is the perennial issue of stress. There is the issue of anonymity, that we live in a largely anonymous society, and there is the fact that we want to pursue our goals, the pursuit of an individual identity and goals in a society of equals that rob us of time. We don't think that we have time, and in order to be kind to others, we need time.
So, well, when people of my generation were being raised, I was always taught the golden rule to treat other people as you would like to be treated, and I won't say that I follow that perfectly. I think all of us are capable of being rude intentionally or otherwise. But it's. I'd like to go back to something you touched on a little bit earlier, talking about self-esteem and about children being raised to feel good about themselves. Do we have a problem with parents basically transmitting the idea to their children that they are the center of the universe? We have parents who just dote on their children to the point of...
Self-esteem is a good thing. Somebody called it an immune system for the soul. We need self-esteem to be sane in our lives, to have fulfilling lives. But we have given our children too much of a good thing. We have made it so that they are trapped in a cage of narcissism that we have built for them. We have been too preoccupied with building them up and forgetting that no society can survive without ample doses of self-restraint on the part of its citizens.
Talk a little bit about what in your book is termed the obedience to the unenforceable.
That is the realm of civility and good manners. Lord Moulton, a judge who lived in the first part of the 20th century in England, said that there are three kinds of actions in which human beings engage. One is the kind of action that is regulated by the law. Another is a kind of action where there is no regulation, we can do whatever we want. And then there is a third realm, which he called the realm of the obedience to the unenforceable, which is the realm of good manners and civility. In other words, if I do not give my seat on a bus to a pregnant woman, the law will not go after me. But I have in me a certain instinct, a certain inclination to do the right thing and give the seat on the bus to somebody who needs it more than I do. That's the obedience to the unenforceable, and that's the realm of good manners.
One of the ideas that I've struggled with, and I think as I've discussed this with other people over the last 10 or 15 years, is we have this kind of epidemic of rudeness and incivility on the one hand. On the other side, we almost seem to have an oversensitivity to being offended. In other words, I know maybe, and I hope I'm going to state this correctly, but there seems to be this idea that we have the right not to be offended. There's some sort of inalienable right that I don't have to put up with anybody who does anything that offends me. Do you see where I'm going here? There's kind of these two things kind of operate against one another in some respects. But is being offended sometimes just a choice we make? I choose to be offended by this, and I could also choose not to be?
We have developed a very thin skin in the last two generations when it comes to the politics of personal identity. There are certain aspects of our lives that are so delicate that when they are not treated with kid gloves by others, we react in ways that in other generations would have been deemed exaggerated. And very often we seek recourse against these lights that we perceive as being so harsh and so terrible to bear, sometimes in the law. And so something that would have been deemed simply an act of lack of good manners, and the person at the receiving end of it would not have dwelled on it, today is an act that goes to the realm of the enforceable. The person who at the receiving end of that act of rudeness considers it important enough to be regulated either by the regulations of the workplace or the regulations of the law.
Well, when something bad happens to us, we want to blame somebody for it and make them pay, and I think that could be part of this. But that's not that's getting a little off the track here. I want to invite people to join our discussion. We're talking about civility today. The title of the book under discussion is The Civility Solution, What to Do When People Are Rude. My guest is P.M. Forney, who's the author of the book, and he's also the author of another book on a similar topic called Choosing Civility. You can join our discussion by calling us at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you are in Milwaukee, we would consider it a courtesy if you used our local number, 227-2050, 227-2050. If you would prefer to communicate via the Internet, we have an email address for that. You can write to us. The address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. We're talking about civility, and maybe you don't think that we have a problem with rudeness. Maybe we have a problem with people who are too thin-skinned, or maybe you've got a situation, a life story you'd like to tell us, an encounter that you had and how it went. One of the things that this book does, and I want to make sure we get to this before the hour is over, is it actually offers some practical suggestions for how to handle a number of different situations that I'm sure we've all run into. So we'll get to that as we move along. First, though, I'd like to make sure we get some terms defined so we all understand what we're talking about here. Professor, you use terms to describe rudeness as being either focused or unfocused. What do you mean by that?
Well, first of all, we probably should define rudeness. And to define rudeness, a good way is to define civility and then tell what rudeness is not. Civility is a form of attention, a form of acknowledging others. We are civil when we are attentive to others and we weave restraint, respect, and consideration into the very fabric of that attention, of that awareness. Civility is a benevolent form of awareness of others and doing something according to that awareness. When we are rude, we are unaware of others or we are dismissive. We simply are unable to transcend our own immediate needs and desires to tend to the needs and desires of others. There is a wonderful etymology of the word regard. Regard means to look twice, etymologically, the origin of the word. In other words, when you regard someone, you deem that person worthy of a second look, of respect and consideration, therefore. And this regard is just the opposite, is when you do not deem the person worthy of a second look. And so it's a form of ignoring. So at best, rudeness is a form of ignoring others and their needs and their desires. And at its worst is malice in the different forms that it takes in everyday life.
We have some callers who want to join us, and we'll make that happen. We're going to take a short break first, and when we come back, we'll talk more about civility. And we'll find out after the break, we'll talk about focused and unfocused rudeness. We've given rudeness kind of a definition. We'll move on from there, and we'll take your calls and emails. But first, we'll take a little break and find out some other stuff. Thanks for listening this morning. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Kathleen Dunn. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Nineteen and a half minutes after 10 o'clock, you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's what's coming up a little later on today on the Ideas Network. After 3 on Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders, an encore presentation of Gene Farraka's conversation about the countries of origin of the fruits and vegetables we eat, plus how to pick the tastiest produce in the market. That's coming up after 3 o'clock today with Here on Earth, Gene Farraka. This hour we're talking about civility and what to do when other people are not. And my guest is the author of a book on this subject called The Civility Solution, What to Do When People Are Rude. I'm joined this morning by telephone by P.M. Forney, who is the author of this book. He's also professor of Italian literature at Johns Hopkins University and co-founder of the Johns Hopkins Civility Project. And he's also the author of Choosing Civility. Both of these books are published by St. Martin's Press. You can join us right now by sending an email to talk@wpr.org. We have full phone banks, and before we go to the phones, I started to ask a question, and then I didn't actually let you answer it. So I'll try to make up for that by continuing the discussion here. We've defined rudeness. Now talk about what you mean when you say focused or unfocused rudeness.
The example that I have in the book is, suppose that your friend or your coworker John says that he's going to invite you to lunch to meet someone that he thinks could help you in your work. Then, for some reason or another, Matt invites someone else instead. But he's not really targeting you for rude treatment. He just found that it was more convenient to invite someone else. He is also the kind of person who is perennially late to all of his appointments, and returns, he forgets to return several telephone calls. And that's simply how he functions. He is rude to the world. He's inconsiderate. And that is what I call unfocused rudeness. But then there is the other kind, the focused kind. And imagine that rather than because of simple lack of consideration, your colleague John is reneging on his invitation as a part of a power game to affirm dominance upon you. He wants to keep you in your place. He wants to keep you uncertain of where you stand with him. He wants to put you down. That would be focused rudeness. The focused rude people are those people who keep interrupting you in order to make you look bad to the boss, who ask you embarrassing questions to put you in a difficult position, who spread gossip about your private life, and so on and so forth. This is focused rudeness, and it's often caused by mean-spiritedness.
Let's take a call from Patty in Rice Lake. Patty, good morning. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Yes, good morning. I have a terrible problem with rudeness. One of the things that I have learned is that rudeness is kind of in the ears of the listener. What's rude to some people is not rude to others, and particularly, and it varies throughout the country. I dare say it would vary throughout the world. And sometimes I feel like everybody has this rule book on manners, and I never got a copy. One of the problems I run into is that sometimes it's like lots of people want to be schmoozed. You're not supposed to tell the truth. You're supposed to schmooze the truth. You're supposed to couch it in flowery ways so as not to upset the other person, and I have no talent with that. And I was just wondering what your author thinks about that kind of problem, and if he could give me any hints on how to develop the ability to schmooze the truth to make it easier to hear.
Well, thank you for that call, Patty.
We should always remember that people will forget what we say, but will never forget the way that we have made them feel about themselves. And you can call it schmoozing, or you can call it being considerate and kind, but when you are attentive, when you think twice before you say something, and you couch it in a way that is more palatable for the other person, you are doing the equivalent of not shoving the person in a line, for instance. Just as you would not shove a person, you would not harm the person physically. You would be careful about that. The same is when it comes to verbal encounters, to verbal engagements with others in everyday life. We have to exercise a modicum of care. So it's just about caring. The two books that I have written, Choosing Civility, The 25 Rules of Considerate Conduct, and this new book, The Civility Solution, are intended exactly for people who, like the reader, tell me, I'm a good person, like the listener, I mean. I think I'm a good person, I think I want to do the right thing, but I don't know how to do it. The listener expressed herself very well when she said, I think that when they gave out the manual on how to schmooze, I was not around, I didn't receive a copy. Well, in a way, such a manual can be found in Choosing Civility, the first of my two books. And I hope that she will consider taking a look at it, and I would be curious to receive an email from her after she does and see if that was relevant to her needs.
Well, Patty, thank you for the call. And I guess I have to say I'm a little bit with Patty on this. I'm a little bit too direct with people sometimes myself, and it's something I've been told I have to be careful of. And so I've been trying a little self-improvement. But you talked about our awareness of others. Being polite is sometimes hard work. It's just easier to ignore people.
Yes, indeed. It's an investment of energy, physical and spiritual and psychological energy. But it pays dividends to a large extent. The quality of our lives depends upon the quality of our relationships. We are social creatures. We swim in the social ocean every day. That's our habitat. But although it is true that the quality of our lives depends upon the quality of our relationships, we have to remember that the quality of our relationships depend upon the quality of our relational skills. And good manners, politeness, and civility are time-proven, very effective codes of relational skills. They allow us to be likable. And when you are likable, the world is your oyster. People cannot help liking the likable. And when you are likable, you build platforms of acquaintance and friendship. You gather people around you. You make friends for life. And you strengthen your social bonds. Social skills strengthen social bonds. And social bonds are essential to survive and to thrive. So it is true that it's easier to ignore people. It's easier to go without looking about you and without stopping to say hello and how are you, because very often it's a Monday morning, we are stressed, we are late for work, we are late for going to get our children at school and so on and so forth. But if we find in ourselves the willingness to stop and consider that others are around us and engage them in a conversation and in an act of kindness, we make friends, and that is good for the soul.
How does our lack of civility hurt us? Are there some real costs here?
Yes, because incivility is tied to stress. It is a stressful experience. When we are engaged in a rude exchange, maybe with anger, we have a cascade of the so-called bad hormones, the hormones of stress, taking place in our brain, in our organism. The cortisol, the catecholamines, the hormones and neurotransmitters that are bad for you, for your system, that are harmful to your immune system, are being produced. The heartbeat increases. The cardiocirculatory system is under stress. So there are certainly measurable disadvantages to be when we are engaged in a rude encounter.
We have other callers who want to join us, so let's go back to the phones, and let's take a call next from Bob in Stevens Point. Bob, good morning.
Okay, I'm one of those impolite but proud people who cannot tolerate people who are too long-winded in giving an answer. The presumption that I'm stupid, and if I ask the color of the sky, they want to start at the Big Bang Theory, and I'm going to cut them off or interrupt. Another thing, and I'm not going to pass up this opportunity, is the over-politeness, and it hasn't happened to this guest yet, of callers to talk shows. Their over-politeness bores me, takes up time. Now, the last lady was great, but usually some people want to know the weather and if the corn is drying out in southern Wisconsin. I could care less, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for the call, Bob.
Well, it is true that there are unwritten protocols in every aspect of life, from the dealing with friends to the dealing with radio hosts and dealing with a program which has other listeners. Listen, we cannot please everybody in life, but that is why we need that training in sensitivity that comes from a training in good manners. This is the kind of training that was very common a couple of generations ago and happened at the table, at the kitchen table, when mother would say to little Timmy, you know, you should really eat with your mouth closed. But why, Mama, why should I do that? Well, let me tell you, it just appears that human beings don't seem to enjoy it, looking at half-chewed food in the mouths of others, or words to that effect.
Now, amen to that.
With that answer, mother gave or used to give to little Timmy not only a simple rule of good manners, of table manners, but the basic principle of ethical systems, the notion that our actions have consequences for others. And we should care about that. eating with his mouth closed or with his mouth open had consequences for others. Maybe little Timmy would not understand immediately, but mother would repeat the message. And in the long run, he would understand. That was the teaching of manners that translated into the training wheels of altruism. Manners are always the training wheels of altruism because they are about transcending, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, your own immediate needs to tend to the needs of others. They are always generous. They are always about consideration of others. But in the long run, are also good for you. Good manners, kindness, gentleness are their own reward.
Sergio in Chicago, it's your turn next to be on the program. Sergio, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Pretty good. Thank you for asking. What's your question for our guest?
Well, my question was, he's a fellow Italian, so ciao, come stai?
Ciao, Sergio.
I think one of the observations living in a trendy kind of town in Chicago is that I think the culture and the teachings of America today is really nearing the bottom of the scale. In other words, people would rather watch Britney Spears get out of a limo, et cetera, and think that's okay. You know, so rudeness is not just words. And like the other caller said, which I don't agree with, when somebody wants to know about the weather, you know what, he's just being polite. He's acknowledging your existence. I think the society right now is not polite at all. They think it's a waste of time, and I see it every day with self-serving. They think the world owes them everything, and it leads to a lot of rudeness, and it's pretty pathetic. And I don't want to be long-winded, so I'll take my response off here.
Yes, and it is true. The concern that Sergio has is shared by millions of Americans. They think that that there is a decline in civility, and the decline has gotten worse in the last 20 years or so. We all feel it, and we are all concerned because we think of what that does also to our youngsters and what kind of youngsters of new generation are we raising. However, having said that there is a decline of certain established and traditional rules of good behavior, we should also say that every generation creates new rules of deference and respect that in part take the place of those that are becoming obsolete. The example that I often make is that of the pregnant woman, which I mentioned before, who is not given a seat on a bus to a youngster by a youngster riding with her. The woman is not treated with the kindness and the consideration that maybe she would have been treated by a youngster two or three generations ago. In that case, there is a decline in civility. But when that woman steps into her workplace, the number of men who take her seriously as a professional peer and as an intellectual peer is higher today than in my father's generation. And so there is, I would say, in that sense, an increase in civility. I think that we are kinder today than we used to be to the environment. We have an ecological consciousness that was not there only 10 or 20 years ago. And I think that's part of being civil. I think we are more respectful today of people who look differently from the way we look. I think that we are more protective of our children, of the rights of children than we used to be. We are kinder to animals than we used to be. So in many ways, we are more civil than we used to be, but we tend to forget that. We tend to see the half-empty glass rather than the half-full glass.
Let's go next to Lynn in Green Bay. Lynn, good morning.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I've been so into this being rude whenever I go to a grocery store, department store, whatever, and nobody thanks me for my item or product or whatever that I purchased. And a lot of them are older, too. They're not only young. And usually you say, have a nice day. You end up thanking them for your purchase that you just purchased. And I expect two words. And a lot of times I say, you're welcome. See if they get it, you know. And a lot of times they don't. course, with a lot of things coming over here, of course, because of our Darla being so dead. And what are they to think of Americans? That's just rude. That's just being polite. Two different words that would make my day. Thank you for taking my call.
And thank you for calling, Lynn.
I had trouble hearing the last part of the conversation of the call, but I think that the listener was talking about the generalized experience of rudeness that we that is so prevalent in everyday life. I think that we have established that, and we have to live with that. What we should do, I think, is to decide how we want to live with that. And the first thing, I think, to consider is that you want to be true to your own ideals, to your principles. And you do not become rude in the face of rudeness. If you believe in the importance of being considerate, respectful, and kind, you continue to be respectful and kind, which doesn't mean that you have to be a doormat, but it does mean that you are going to be assertive. And you're going to be assertive in the face of rudeness, especially with the closest to you, those closest to you, your spouses, your friends, your family, because we teach others how to treat us by how much we are willing to endure from them. And if we keep enduring the small indignities, the small cruelties, the micro-cruelties that are acts of rudeness, then those people will continue to do that, to make us suffer these micro-indignities, and they will believe that it is acceptable. We should tell the person who makes us feel bad about ourselves, who hurts our feelings, that person has done it, and confront that person, especially if it's a family member, and say, this is not acceptable. When you do that, this is how it makes me feel, so I would like you to change your ways. I would like you to stop doing that. And that is not easy to do. But I advocate that we do this in my book, because the alternative is to be treated as a doormat, and it's not good for your self-esteem, and it's not good for your health, and sometimes it is a substantial cause of stress and as such of illness, and sometimes the reaction to perceived unfairness and rudeness can spiral into physical violence.
Well, one of the things that your book does is you talk about some specific situations and make some suggestions. And Tom in Minneapolis has a question that's directly related to that. So this would be a good time to go there. Tom, let's go to you next and find out what your question is. Tom, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. I love your program, by the way. I heard you speaking about the civility issue and. I'm reminded of a current situation that I face almost weekly with my neighbor. We live kind of out in the country and have for 5 years enjoyed a lot of peace and quiet. We socialize on our porch and enjoy reading and listening to the sounds of the birds. And in the last 5 years, neighbor has developed the property next door, and he enjoys riding a large tractor, usually on Thursday, Friday, Saturday evenings, and he'll mow his huge lawn, and it's so loud that we can't even hear each other talk. And I guess my challenge is I feel like I need to approach him, but I don't want to create a negative relationship between the two families going into the future.
The problem is that if you do not inform him of what his behavior does to you, he may not even know that he's doing it. And also, if he continues to do it and you continue to repress and repress and repress, someday you may explode. And at that point, your neighbor will say, but why didn't you say something? How was I to know? And at that point, you're doubly at fault for having exploded and for not having said anything. In my book, I suggest a three-step, very simple way of coping with rudeness, and I call it with the acronyms S-I-R, SIR. The way of coping with rudeness when prevention doesn't work is to state the problem. S, you state the problem. I, you inform the person of what the problem does to you, and R, S-I-R, you request a change. So in this case, you state, you know, yesterday the noise from your tractor was again overwhelming. When you do that, when you use it in the way you do, it really bothers us. It's really a problem because we can hardly hear one another talk. And finally, we would really be appreciated if you didn't do that anymore, or if you do it at times when it is not a problem for all of us. We would be very grateful. So by stating the problem, by informing what the problem does for you, and by requesting a change, you have done what you could, and you owed it to yourself, and you owed it also to the other person who, as I said, maybe was not aware or completely aware of how disruptive their behavior was.
Tom, if you don't mind, I just could I ask you a question first? What would you like your neighbor to do? I mean, you don't want them to. Do you want him to stop mowing his lawn or get a muffler on his tractor?
Oh no, it's just I think most of my neighbors choose to mow, you know, during the day or morning or, you know, Saturday morning or something that's less of a social hour. There's a lot of noise going on, and I think he just picks these times of the day because they're most relaxing for him, and I don't think he likes to spend as much time with his family. So it tends to be, you know, once his kids are put to bed, then he goes out and rides a tractor, and that just happens to be, you know, at the end of the day when we're trying to relax on the porch. So I
think he's aware of the fact that he's disturbing your peace?
Well, I think it's what you state as general rudeness. You know, he doesn't really think about
us. Unfocused, yeah.
So I guess I like your suggestions, and I'm going to probably do that. My concern is, what do I do afterwards when he may be disgruntled with me for, you know, several years?
I mean, well, I would take one thing at a time. There is always a modicum of risk in responding to rudeness, and it can have an effect, a negative effect on a relationship. But if you consider the alternative. If it is an issue that has to do with your quality of life, and you have a chance, make a judgment also on the kind of person that he is. Is he the kind of person who is reasonable, who can understand, who is willing to compromise, or is he a person who in the past has given you reason to believe that he is harsh and perhaps even dangerous? In that case, I would not recommend. I would be inclined to tell you to be more careful. But if he is just a regular person who happens to be a little bit inconsiderate, I would certainly bring this to his attention, and I would go exactly in the informative way. And tell him, John, you know, maybe you don't realize that I want you to know that when you mow the lawn at 9 at night, when we are trying to relax after a day of work, it's really grating on our nerves. And if it is the same for you, would you mind mowing it at 4 in the afternoon at a different time? We would be very grateful if you did that. And if then he seems to be disgruntled with you, you still have a choice of approaching him and saying, you seem to have changed in our relationship. There seems to be have occurred a change in our relationship, and proceed from there and see. And try to make him reason. If the person is completely unreasonable, there is little that you can do, you have to bear the consequences of the rude behavior.
We need to get to a break, and we're going to come back and take more phone calls. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Ten 48. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and here is what's coming up next hour with Larry Mueller. After 11, Larry takes Garden Talk to the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair at Custer, Wisconsin. Along with Jim Packard, his guests include Portage County Extension Agriculture Agent Ken Schrader and Milwaukee TV host and educator Melinda Myers. That's coming up after 11 this morning here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about civility with the author of a book, The Civility Solution, What to Do When People Are Rude. My guest is P.M. Forney, a professor of Italian literature at Johns Hopkins University and co-founder of the Johns Hopkins Civility Project. He's also the author of Choosing Civility, which is also published by St. Martin's Press. We have full phone banks, Professor, and so I would like to take some more calls. Let's go next to Charlie in La Crosse. Charlie, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Forney.
Good morning.
I have a comment and then a question, and I'll take the answer off the air. What I'm seeing where I work is that, and I actually teach classes to nurses and doctors on how to deal with rudeness and anxiety.
Yes.
And you need to set a directive. You need to say the behavior is not going to be tolerated. I think we should look at it somewhat like racism. When someone makes a racist comment, you don't tolerate that. You pull them aside and you say, hey, that's not going to happen here. And then my question is, do you think there's a correlation between the way we're raising young people today, cell phones and computers, and have they forgotten how to have a conversation and how to relate to one another? And thank you.
I'm going to answer first the second question. We are witnessing a new generation that seems to be very often more at ease communicating through a screen than communicating in person. The digital person is going to be in the next several decades remains to be seen, but I don't think that a paradigm shift in the way we live, like the one caused by the use of the internet, will be without consequences. We are going to be different human beings to a certain extent. We are going to redefine what a friendship is, what an acquaintance is, what relating with others is in the past, in the next couple of generations. But I don't want to speculate now in details. The other question was about. I can't.
Well, he was talking about not putting up with inappropriate
behavior.
Yes,
I recall now. To go the zero tolerance way, that may be fine, but it doesn't. Take into consideration the fact that people very often do not know that they are crossing the line, they are pushing the envelope. So you can say rudeness will not be tolerated, but there will always be someone who will act in a way that is perceived as rude by others without being aware of it. One typical example is the example of swearing, of profanities. For many people, profanities are just part of the pepper and salt of every meal, a linguistic meal that they are giving others. It's just something that comes with the territory of their being speakers of the English language at the beginning of the new centuries. Other people are offended by the use of profanities. So I think that there should be encouragement of polite behavior in the workplace, but it's difficult to define it scientifically all the time.
Well, it's easy to be rude to people you don't know. I think one of the things you point out in your book is we're becoming so disconnected from one another. We don't really live in neighborhoods anymore where we get to know the people who are around us. We travel alone in cars, we're listening to the radio, or we're watching television by ourselves, or we're on our cell phone, or this or that. We do so many things that disconnect us from other people in our society that it seems to be much easier to be rude now than ever before.
Yes, indeed. We are not part of cogent and coherent neighborhoods the way we used to. We live to a large extent among people we don't know. And the situation of traffic is typical. The road rage incident happens because of the volatile mixture of anonymity and stress. We are stressed because we are late for work, and we live in an anonymous environment because the driver in the next car is not really a human being, but it's a driving cipher, and we are protected in the steel cocoons of our cars, and we think that we can get away with anything. And so if a slide takes place and there is a strong reaction, we can go all the way to a confrontation that can entail a fisticuff or even a shooting. But if you think of a variation of the situation, one in which after driver A has cut off driver B, and driver B has responded with the first show of finger puppetry, so to speak, the two drivers look at one another and they discover that they know one another. One is the principal of the school where the other's children go. One is the pastor of the church, of the congregation, where the family of the other driver worships. What do you think is going to happen? Well, they will be touched by embarrassment, and they will try to minimize what happens. They will cede the right of way and use their hands in a more friendly way and less offensive way. What happens? What happened here? Stress was still there, was still part of the equation, but anonymity was taken out of the equation, and now the two drivers have an incentive to be kind to one another because they are part of one another's lives again. And so this gives us a sense of the importance of anonymity. The more we know those around us, in general, we are less likely to be rude to them and to be victims of rudeness in return.
Well, we have an email from Wayne in San Mateo, California, who asks, what advice would the guest offer the moderator of this program, who sometimes comes across to his listeners as impatient with their questions and can be somewhat dismissive at times? I respond to that by saying touche.
Touche. Well, the best way of responding to this is to say, I'll try to do better.
I try to do better every day. Some days are better than other days, I can tell you that. Let's take one more call. This time we'll go to Jim in Salt Lake City.
Thanks, John. I don't think you're rude. I think you're a good host.
Anyway,
my question is this. Is cell phones. I own a cell phone, and there's certain places I just don't think it's appropriate, like in movie theaters, or if you're at a resort, at a golf course, and you paid a lot of money, and you're not in your usual foursome. And people just pull it out, start talking in the middle of the movie or on the tee box, and you ask them, please don't. And my brother's more impolite in his request. And people just look at you like, what are you talking about? I can do this. How would you respond to that?
Thank you. Professor, before you answer this, I'll let you know you've only got about 45 seconds here.
Yes. The problem with this is that the telephone call has become, in recent years, a public, what used to be a private act, it's a public act. And the situation described by the listener is perfect for the SIR steps that I outline in my book. You have to inform, you say, because evidently the other person is not attuned to your sensitivity and to your standards and to your protocols of engaging in relationships with others of this kind. So you have to explain what your expectations are, and so you state, you inform, and you request, and hoping that it will work. It will not work all the time, but I would venture to say that most of the times it will.
Professor, thank you so much for spending time with
us today.
You're
welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
P.M. Forney is a professor of Italian literature at Johns Hopkins University and author of the book The Civility Solution, What to Do When People Are Rude. This program was produced by Carmen Jackson with on-air production by John Tretter. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.